I have to formally and humbly apologize to Mr. Beast. So here's the situation. All right, let's jump in. I have a bunch of topics here. I got to start with an apology. I have to formally and humbly apologize to Mr. Beast. So here's the situation. We've talked about it a little bit before. Back when we did Camp MFM, we invited Mr. Beast. And I should say invited, meaning we invited ourselves to his house, basically, in order to do it. We were like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. He's like, yeah, that'd be cool. But, you know, schedule's crazy. I'm interested, but, you know, not in L.A. because I'm in North Carolina. We're like, oh, coincidence. What town do you live in? That's where we're doing it. And so we went out there, had a good time. One of the things that happened was we were touring Duke's campus. And we were on their basketball court, and I made him a bet that I could make a half court shot before he did for $10,000.
Very stupid bet. He stood to gain nothing, and you stood to gain everything.
Well, he could get $10,000 also.
Oh, I didn't know that you had to pay him $10,000. All right.
Yeah, it was whoever made it first. So put 10 grand up. He's like, I had learned this over the course of a few days. He's like me. He's a bit of a degenerate gambler. Like, I think his company, they have like a separate bank account where it's like, yeah, Beast, you could gamble this, but don't touch the main stuff. And that's all money he already won from gambling. So they're like, look, that's your house money to play with.
Petty cash.
I think the petty cash was like seven figures, if I'm correct. So anyways, bet him this amount, hit the shot, glorious moment. And then it's like, we're so busy, you know, we just go back to doing the camp. And it's like, yeah, cool. You know, I'll pay you. And I was like, great. You'll pay me. That's what he does. And so he didn't right away. And so I was like, and everybody, all the other people on the trip were like, yo, that's always awesome. Awesome moment. Did he pay you? And I had to just be like, no, not yet. But he's good for it, for sure. Right. He's good for it. And so that became the running joke, was like, no, he didn't pay yet, but he will. And I brought it up on the podcast because I talked about this on our end of year awards as like a highlight moment, was saying, dude, I bet you I can make the shot in half court of Cameron Indoor Stadium, this hallowed college basketball stadium, and just having the balls to make that bet and then having the luck of hitting it was a high moment. And I said the low moment was following up like 3 weeks later and be like, hey, you got that? But yeah, no rush. But you got that money? This wasn't a fake bet. This was a real bet, bro. Like, you know, first said it in a joking way, like, oh, bitch, better pay my money. Then 3 weeks later, like, hey, did you pay? And so then I was like, oh man, low moment was being the, like, having to follow up and being like, you know, basically begging for the cash.
So did he pay?
He was cool the whole time. He was just like, oh yeah, my bad. I'll have my assistant pay. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Cool. And so that I said that joke on the podcast, and then people have been referencing it like later. Like, people will, I don't know why, listeners reference it. They tweet about it every once in a while. And so I guess he saw this tweet recently, and this is now like many months, like six months after later, the event. Yeah. And he was like, somebody tweeted out this whole story, this whole thread. They go, you know, I realize why the Mr. Beast not paying you stories like didn't sit right with me. And it's because you, Sean, also stood me up. You said you wanted to invest in my thing and that we should talk. And then I followed up three times over email asking, be like, hey, you said you wanted to invest and like, let's talk. And you haven't replied to three of my emails, and like, you're ghosting me just like he's ghosted you. Not cool. And if you want to, you know, make things right, you should take that call and you should invest in my company. And so he kind of put this out there as a bit of a ballsy tweet thread. And Mr. B saw it, and he DM'd me. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, I paid you like a while back. What do you mean? And I was like, what? Oh, and I went.
Oh,
and I checked.
Dude, you punk.
So I had given him a Bitcoin, like a fresh Bitcoin wallet, because he's like, I'll pay you in Bitcoin. And I was like, all right, no problem. And I'd given him a Bitcoin wallet, and I never checked this thing because, like, you know, who checks like a random Bitcoin wallet you created? He paid me back in November. And so for months, I've been like telling this joke about the, like, hey, I know you probably meant to do it, but you didn't do it yet. Just when you get a chance. No rush. When you get a chance, just would love.
You think he's pissed at you?
No, I don't think he gives a shit. In the same way that I didn't actually give a shit. I just thought it was funny. The other thing we learned at that camp with from that guy Hasan Minhaj, the comedian, he goes, comedy is all about low status. And I remember that, and I took that. I was like, oh, my comedy is usually trying to be cocky funny. Like somebody says something and I say how, dude, you were like, you don't know about pop culture. And I was like, bro, I am pop culture, right? Like it's more cocky. But actually what I learned from Hasan was that low status is actually a funnier, more endearing way to sort of win people over. So telling this story about like, yeah, then I had to follow up and it turned from this cool moment to this incredibly lame moment. That was a low, it's trying to do a low status comedy thing. But then I realized I'd been wrong the whole time. He paid me in November. so, whoops.
Damn, dude. That's a pretty big mess up. You're just disparaging this guy.
Yeah, I was slandering the dude left and right, just saying, at least I pay my debts, right? Like, I was joking around like that, but incorrect. He paid.
All right, we have an end.
Happy ending for all involved.
All right, a quick message from our sponsor, which is, of course, HubSpot. Now, look, growing a business is tough, and it's tough because a lot of times you have to duct tape a ton of software together to make it work. I've been there, and it's a pain in the butt. You have this thing connecting to that thing, and the two things that are being connected, one of them breaks, or the thing connecting them doesn't work, and it's a mess. You have all these moving parts, and it's just a pain in the butt because you don't know where the single source of truth is. And that's where HubSpot's customer platform comes into play. Finally, you've got this single source of truth where everything is organized and tracked in one place. For example, if you have customers emailing you, they've got really easy ways to see who on your team is replying to which customer, what they're saying, and things like that. And you can track it all in one place. They also have a lot of AI-supported stuff, which means that you can automatically know which type of messaging you need to send to that type of customer. And yes, it sounds natural, like a real person. I actually use it. I use it with my company, Hampton, and it works wonderfully. And when leads come in, you know which channel they came through, you know who's going to follow up with them, and it's all seamless and easy. So if you're interested, it's simple. Go to HubSpot.com and check it out and see how you can use it to grow your business. Yeah, I was shocked that you were saying that on air, by the way. That he didn't pay. I was like, this is going to make its way to him.
I didn't just say it randomly. People asked, they go, did he pay? And then I'm like, oh, what am I going to say? Yes? No. If I didn't think he paid, I was going to say no. I wasn't just like proactively being like, by the way, call out. You know, that's not how it was.
I appreciate, you know who sometimes, you know, it's just the people listening. It's just Sean and I basically in a Zoom right now. We're on a Riverside. So just us talking. And it's very easy to forget that there's other people who will hear this. I find myself saying stuff all the time.
Yeah, you get real comfortable.
You get very comfortable. And I admire Joe Rogan. I don't listen to a ton of Joe Rogan, but I do watch some of his clips. And he does a really good job of, he rarely disrespects people. He'll say like, oh, they just have a difference of opinion. It's all good. Or he'll say, someone will bring up, hey, did you hear how this person was talking trash? And he'll just say, oh, you know, that's funny. That's funny. He does a really good job of not picking fights. And I saw on your thing, on your list, you have this kind of fight that started. And it looks like I started it, and I don't want it to come off that way. But basically, on this pod, I try never to like pick fights. Or if I do pick a fight, it's like I'm actually going to go to battle with this. And you have this, what's the guy's name? Stephen Bartlett thing on there.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk
about bring that up?
Yeah, by the way, I actually want to say this. You're right that when it's me and you just talking like this, and there's nobody else here, it's really easy to get comfortable. You forget. Oh, cool. 150,000 people are listening, right? If I was in front of an audience, if I could see 150,000 people, there's no way I would feel as comfortable and as loose making jokes or saying something, or like I'll do this often. It's gotten me in a lot of trouble, actually.
Yeah, you say shit, it's bad.
And I decided as long as I'm saying something that I actually think, I'm going to carry on in that way. Because I don't usually think negative things about people.
Well, the way that I do it nowadays, and the pod actually taught me this, which was if I'm going to talk negatively about someone behind their back, I better be ready to say it to their face. And so I work really hard to only say things privately that I'm okay saying to that person or even publicly sometimes. And that's the takeaway. I think it was, have you heard the story of like Abe Lincoln? Basically, he like talked trash about some guy. And they're like, I challenge you to a duel. And he's like, shit, I don't want to go to a duel. And so he's like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm afraid. I don't want to fight you. And then he's like, that's it. I'm never talking trash about people. And right. I remember reading that. And I'm like, that's a good sign. And talking trash is easy. I do it every once in a while just because I'm human. But if you're going to do it, we got to be able to say it to their face. And so that's kind of my rule that I try to live by, but it's very hard to follow. But all right, you want to talk about the Bartlett thing?
Yeah. Okay. So you tee it up because I think you tweeted it out. So what's on your mind?
Well, nothing. I was just curious. But basically, there's a guy named Stephen Bartlett. He's got a pod that's quite good. It's mostly a YouTube thing, I think, but pretty good. He's interviews interesting people. Background is he had a company called Social Chain, which there's a long story about it that we've talked about before, where he basically owned, among other things, a bunch of Twitter handles, and he could help make a product popular or a TV show popular by sharing it amongst all the Twitter handles, whatever. It's an agency. It was relatively successful. It was definitely successful. He was like kind of a prodigy. It ends up getting acquired, and the company that acquired it did like some type of reverse merger. It goes public at its peak, hundreds of millions of dollars. An article came out on Thursday. And by the way, this guy, Steven, he worked for Sean as an intern when he was 21 years old. And we've said fun stories about that. An article came out that said this thing was sold for $8 million. And I shared, I go, whoa, this thing was only sold for $8 million. I thought this was like a publicly traded company for hundreds of millions. I'm a little confused. What's the story here? And people got pissed. Not at me. They got pissed at him saying, this guy's saying he's built up a $300 million company. And they listed tons of evidence saying otherwise. And I didn't actually look into the evidence. I don't know the truth. But people were really angry at that. And it was pretty wild to see.
Yeah, I think you framed it well. There's basically two things going on here. One, as somebody gets really famous, the target on their back gets bigger. And so he's become more and more famous. He has a very big kind of social media presence. I think he's got like 1 million followers on Instagram or Twitter or something like that. LinkedIn, he's big as well.
He's on the Shark Tank of England.
Yeah, he's on Dragon's Den, which is like Shark Tank in Europe. So he's like well known there. He wrote a book. He's like doing things. He goes on. He has this podcast. He goes on these like tours, basically, where he like speaks in
he's
front
a
of
guy.
Auditoriums. I call him the Black Gary Vee. He's like very much like Gary Vee, in my opinion. And in the same way that some people not Gary Vee of like, bro, you didn't build a business. That was your dad's business that you were just the marketing guy for. And he's like, well, actually, like the business was really small. And then I started Wine Library TV and it grew much bigger. You know, there's people who come out and say, oh, you're not as you represent yourself. And so when you see this headline that, oh, his agency sold for $7 million, you're like, bro, what? $7 million? Like, what? Why are you representing yourself as much bigger than you are? And the explanation, I think, is kind of simple. So here's the explanation. His agency was called Social Chain. When they got acquired, they renamed the larger company, which didn't have as much of a public-facing brand, Social Chain Group. And so Social Chain Group was a bigger business that did many things, had many agencies underneath, had some other things. There's an e-commerce. There's a big e-commerce business that was with it. They had like a mattress company, basically. And most of the revenue came from the e-commerce side, and a smaller slice of the revenue came from the agency side, and even a smaller slice came from his specific agency called Social Chain. I think when he sold, when Social Chain got acquired or whatever by the larger group, I think they were at roughly $9 million a year in revenue, something like that. And that was maybe 2 years in, and it was like a great upstart story. It was like 20 employees all under the age of 25 doing this cool disruptive social media, you know, marketing at the time. And this is, 2014, 2015. And then, got acquired by this bigger thing. Those guys had an e-commerce business. And so naturally they're like, oh, great. This marketing agency is a good business to have. It'll help our businesses. Plus it brings in, revenue alone from its service business. And I think where he went, so I think the simple explanation is, yeah, his business got acquired. The overall business did a bunch of revenue. His agency did not. But he was a key player in that overall group. I think he was co-CEO of the group. The group was, one of four or five divisions. So he was kind of like a division head of a larger company. Okay, great. Where I think he went wrong is there's like a clip of him on Dragon's Den and the other guy's like, do you even know anything about business? And he goes, know anything about business? I built a $300 million company by the age of 28. And that's like the clip that the guy, you know, some people on Twitter are circulating, being like,
okay, I didn't
see
that.
Full of shit, dude. You didn't build a $300 million business. There was a $300 million business that acquired your small agency. To that, I say, they are correct. He did get, I mean, to me, that's like a very, maybe it's just relatable because I've been in those situations where I kind of like, I feel insecure in a moment. And I can imagine being a young guy on TV and then the other investor says, what do you know about business? I could see your insecurity flaring up in a moment there and try to puff your chest out and say the biggest thing you can, even though it's not technically true. It'd be like when we got acquired by Twitch, it's like, you know, I ran a division at Twitch. It'd be like me saying I built or ran a $5 billion company, right? That would not be true. That would just be like, you know, puffing my chest out in a way that's misleading. So
you
think
forgot the ER. I was a builder on a $3 billion company. You were a builder.
Right. I was a part of a company I joined a company 13 years after it was founded. And, you know, I was early. But I've felt that, for example, I feel silly about this now, which is that when we got acquired, the deal was no disclosure of the terms. But somehow it got leaked to TechCrunch and I think a couple others that we got acquired, and they put a price in there of $25 million, and the price was not $25 million; it was less than that.
But the answer's got to be no comment.
But I could have corrected it. So I could have gone and said, no, it wasn't that. I didn't even have to say what it was. I could have just, in retrospect, I could have just said, it's lower than that, but I can't disclose. Instead, I just said, hey, I can't say anything about it. I'm not allowed to say anything. And Twitch also said that I'm not allowed to say anything. And so it just sat out there. And a bunch of people were like, wow, great exit, $25 million. And I'm like, yeah, that would have been a great exit. It's still good, but less good than that. So that's not the accurate number. And that's still just what sits out there today, is that people think that that's what the number was. And it kind of benefited me, I remember, in some ways. And every time it benefited me, I felt guilty. And just like, it's also a weak move to like take a representation that makes something you did seem greater than it actually was. So I didn't like that. But I can relate to this moment where you like, the ego part of you or the insecure part of you wants to feel like something is, wants to say, no, I did a great thing. So, you know, I understand where he's coming from in that point of view, but I don't really see what the controversy is besides that. I think it's just like, is the dude more famous than what he did with his agency? Yeah, probably. But he's famous because he's amazing at creating content, and he's a great, like, he's a great brand builder. He's built his own brand.
How old is he? He's only 28, maybe.
Yeah, he's like mid to late 20s, something like that. So,
I mean, I'd say you're doing all right, dude.
Yeah,
he's pulled it off. I think
the haters have a point. Yeah, he did overrepresent. He did overrepresent in some ways. Yes, that's true. Every time he says I built a company worth hundreds of millions of dollars, it's not really true. He probably knows that.
He's a very hateable guy, not because I dislike him. I actually like his content, but I think he's hateable because he's young, he's good looking, he's successful, he's pretty, I don't know, cocky, but like confident. I mean, you know, it's easy to hate people. He's in some regards a very hateable guy.
Yeah, when you have everything that people want.
That's what I mean.
You know, okay, you've got money, fame, looks, charisma, you know, whatever, body. What else is there? You know, I'm not sure he's really missing anything. So yeah, there's a natural visceral reaction some people have to that, which is like, either A, it can't be all good, there's got to be something wrong and I'm gonna find it, or B, fuck that guy. I'm tired of seeing him on my Instagram feed.
What's this financial freedom thing that you wanted to talk about?
Let me do two. Okay, so I want to do this story about this woman I met who I think has a really cool business. So a couple podcast episodes ago, I said, hey, I got this idea for a D2C business. It would be best run, I think, by a woman who's like got it because it's a product for women. And it uses my joke, which is like, I don't know how to pitch it exactly. So it's like a normal thing, but beautifully done. Like, just imagine, like, you know, pens, but just beautifully done, right? Like, and it's true. Like, that's part of the shtick of this product. It's just like, it's well packaged and well made, beautifully done. And so, anyways, I got a bunch of inbound, and I joked about it. I was like, oh, to our four female listeners, if you're out there, this could be an idea for you. And a bunch of people replied, maybe 20, 30, 40 people said, hey, what's the idea? I want to hear about it. Here's my background. And one woman had a really interesting background. So her name, I think, is, what is it? Sarah Michelle, something like that. She started this business. I'll pull up her name. Yeah, Sarah Michelle. So she built this business called NP Reviews. I'm guessing you've never heard of this, but here's why it's interesting. She basically built a course prep business and sold it for more than $10 million in 2 years. And I just think that's kind of a badass move to pull off. You don't hear of a lot of course-based businesses that sell at all, let alone sell for eight figures in 2 years. And what she did was basically she built like Kaplan, like the test prep thing for nurse practitioners.
So it's called
NP Reviews, as in nurse practitioner reviews.
Pass your nurse practitioner exam the first time. Stop stressing and start studying smarter with our proven exam review courses.
Awesome. Exactly. So she basically says, yo, you're in school to become a nurse practitioner. You have the big test is coming up. It's like your version of MCATs or LSATs if you're a lawyer. The nurse practitioners have that same thing. And it's like, great. Take, you know, work with us. And you'll pass. They have a 99% pass rate amongst their students. So they're like, you know, don't worry. She's like, don't worry. I was in your shoes.
Wow. This is
I was
awesome.
Stressed about this and I passed. And if I could pass, you could pass. I've helped so many people pass since then. And what she does is it's basically a funnel where she's got ads about this and content about, you know, this exam or becoming a nurse practitioner, which leads you to this landing page, which says, don't stress. We got you. 99% pass rate. We help you pass your upcoming exam. And then she funnels you into a Facebook group. So basically it's like, join the group of 25,000 other people who have passed this exam. And you join the Facebook group and you buy one of the courses. So you can buy this like $300 a month one, $130 a month one, $100 a month one, whichever one you want that fits like whichever test you're planning to take. Built this thing up, sold it to a company called Blueprint that basically is rolling up these test prep things. And I just thought that's an amazing exit, and I'm super impressed.
And here's why it's awesome. If you go to the bottom right, it says powered by Kajabi. That's a $100 a month software that anyone can get.
By the way, I think the president of Kajabi listens. He messaged me.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he DM'd me as well. So it's a $100 a month software. They have like a 30-day trial, so you could even like not pay and just like get your get courses like spinning up and then making some money. So the website, it's fine looking, but it's not like you could make this without a designer. The copy is pretty solid, very clear problem.
Copy is very good. Copy is very good. Like, yeah,
I haven't read it all, but it looks decent.
Look at the headline, just a quick copy thing. So put this up on the screen on YouTube. So go to mpreviews.com. Just want to point this out. So the headline says, pass your nurse practitioner's exam the first time. So what is it, you know, leading with the outcome or the benefit you want versus talking about yourself? She could have said, we are a test prep, a 6-week test prep program with live online classes and a community, blah, blah, blah. That's how most people pitch their products. They talk about themselves. She talked about the outcome. Then the second thing, stop stressing and start studying smarter with our proven ANCC and AANP exam review courses. Okay, great. Stop stressing. So it hits the emotional state you're in and tells you, you know, the better emotional state you're going to be in. And then after that, she basically is like, I did it. You could do it. I've helped these 500 people do it. Here's some testimonials from them. Here's some pictures of their faces. And they're holding up their like certificate that says I passed. And they're like, thank you, Sarah. You helped me pass my exam. And then she's like, there's like a founder letter. Psst, I've been in your shoes. Feeling anxiety as you prepare for your nurse practitioner boards? You're not alone. The stakes are high and these tests aren't easy. You need a review course to help you master this. I get it because I've been there. I remember how I felt studying for this. That's why after passing both of my exams, I decided to create a review thing to help others too. Since these launched, I've helped thousands of people, 98% pass rate. Here's you know how it works, blah, blah, blah. Join our Facebook group and check it out. Just a really well done, really simple product, really simple idea. And I think this, by the way, this idea could be done with any like trade that has certification. So personal trainers get certified for their like health, you know, stuff. And they take this, these programs that, they have to get certifications for, whether you're, you know, dental hygienist, a speech therapist, there's ongoing
architect. It could be anything.
Ongoing professional education and anything that there's a, you know, a finishing school for. So like med school, nursing school, whatever, cosmetology school, whatever it is, being the test prep for that. And obviously she's not the biggest one. Like Kaplan makes a few billion dollars. They offer prep for MCATs and offer prep for nursing school, but you just carve out your niche and you're the more trusted face. You're the more human brand and it's beautifully done.
Our software is the worst.
Have you heard of HubSpot?
See, most CRMs are a cobbled together mess, but HubSpot is easy to adopt and actually looks gorgeous.
I think I love our new CRM.
Our software is the best.
HubSpot, grow better.
Dude, this is why I hate that question when people ask me, if you could start over again with nothing, what would you do? And I say, I would do the same thing. And they go, does that still work? And I would always say, of course it does. Now we have an example. Milk Road did the exact same thing within the last 12 months. And I have another friend named Ben Tossel. Do you know Ben?
He's doing had a company AI called Milk Road now.
Yeah, he had a, oh, that's what we're doing? We're calling it Milk Road now? It's the Milk Road of... Yeah.
Like the Hustle was sort of like the Milk Road for general business. Just happened to precede it by 5 years.
Yeah. Andre the Giant was just the Sam Parr of wrestling. Yeah, that's what we're going to do now. I like that. He's a big buff guy. He's pretty much the Sam Parr of wrestling.
Triggered.
Anyway, like... I say I would do the exact same thing. And now you're an example. You did the exact same thing. And then now there's Ben. And Ben goes, well, I'm just following. I heard on the pod that Sean said he just copied you. So I'm going to copy Sean copying you. And you know what? It's working. It's working. He's got this AI newsletter and it's working. And there's a handful of businesses. There's a bunch of businesses where it's basically the same thing all the time, but a little bit different. And maybe not even better, just a little bit different or in a particular niche. This course business, this is another one of those where it's just the same thing. Her website is, I think it's only like 8 or 9 or 10 pages. She's got the webinar. She's got like the different offerings, the Facebook group. It's the same thing that you can do in any case. And in some cases, this could be a home run, I bet. You know, like I sold a little bit early, but Morning Brew is doing, I think they said $70 million in revenue. Industry Dive sold for $500 million. Those are all home runs. Same with the course business. I think there's a world where you could do the exact same thing. It could be quite huge, although $10 million is awesome. So that's why I think that whenever people ask that question, it's stupid or I hate it because you're just looking for an easy answer and you're looking for permission to not to do something because you want me to say it's outdated or doesn't work anymore. And my answer to that is no, it works. It works. Don't ask permission. Just do it.
Right. Yeah. There's a better version of that question. That question is sort of like the question when somebody asked Elon Musk, they're like, and Elon, you're a great inspiration to many entrepreneurs out there. What words of advice do you have to somebody to encourage them to start a business? And he goes, if you need words of encouragement to start a business, don't do it. And that's how I feel about like, if you're really clueless about what ideas should I do? First of all, this whole podcast has hundreds of ideas and examples of ideas you could do. Don't overthink it. You could just do any of those. Secondly, you should have a running list of irritations and problems that you experience in your professional and personal life that you're like, God, if somebody made a way that made this better or made this easier or made this faster or made this cheaper, I would buy it. That's a great source of startup inspiration. If you're just like, I don't know, maybe Sam will tell me how to be a successful person. That's not what successful people do. Now, having said all that, I'm doing it again. I have a little example of this. Okay, so I've talked on here about my personal trainer, and my personal trainer is my buddy J.A. You've met him before. Awesome guy, has become a great friend and has delivered a ton of value in my life. As you know, I basically was not working out and was like, you know, on this steady climb of like, yo, I'm going to gain 15 pounds a year.
What was your peak weight? 250, 220?
Not too, probably like 230 was okay, my 230. Peak weight. And not like, oh, I'm bulking. It wasn't muscle mass. Let's put it that way. And so anyways, I get in touch with Jay and I'm like, hey, I want to make a change. He's like, awesome. How often are you working out right now? I'm like, 0 times a month. And he's like, cool. Okay. Let's start there. And so He came over and took me from like zero to now working out 5 days a week, eating better, you know, seeing a bunch of, you know, great gains and results, getting stronger, fitter, healthier, more mobile, all those things. I'm playing basketball again. My life has gotten a lot better. And so I'm like, dude, you helped me with this one area I really wanted help in my life. How can I return the favor? Okay, I know I'm paying you, but how can I help you even beyond that? And so he's basically always wanted to have his own successful business. And he's like, I see what you do. I think that's awesome. I want kind of the same. I'm thinking about e-commerce or this or that.
He goes, I want that. I want that.
And I go, all right, dude, I got it for you. I have an idea that I think will work, that I think will make, it'll be successful, which is great because that's what we want. We don't want to fail. The second thing is it will lead to a lifestyle that I think you enjoy. It's not a ton of like grunt work. It doesn't take a ton of capital up front. And so I'm basically, check this out. I'm helping him create a milk road for personal trainers. And so Basically it's going to be a newsletter that goes out every morning to other, like it could be fitness enthusiasts, but I think starting market is just other trainers. So train the trainers is the thing I keep saying. And because I'm like, dude, you are awesome with workouts. You're awesome with mindset stuff. You find all these interesting, like, I don't know, links to like cool, like, oh, Andrew Huberman said this thing about the supplement. Check this out, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, I feel like if you just kind of published your daily, you know, your daily, what's going on in your day to day as a trainer, that would just be an awesome email to receive if I was another trainer. So we created this format and we created this brand. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to help
you. You have the URL?
Yeah. So the URL, there's no sign up yet, but I just got the domain. The email is called The Daily Pump. And so mydailypump.com is going to be the email. So go register for this because I want feedback on it. But I'm going to build this whole thing in public. So Milk Road, I didn't build in public. I was like, oh, this is a good idea. I'm going to sprint on this. And basically 1 year built the thing up into the largest crypto newsletter in the world and sold it. And so, you know, had an awesome outcome there. And now that I did that, I know how I would do this in like 10 other spaces. I don't really want to go do that because it feels like I'd be on the hamster wheel, just playing the same level of the video game, even though it's probably smart. I have the knowledge now of how to do it. It'd be too boring. I don't want to do it. But this has a different like meaning, right? If I could help him build up this business, I think that will be, you know, like just helping my friend out with something that I know would really be helpful to be impactful to them. And so, so that's what I want to do. And I'm going to share how we build this thing up, you know, sort of step by step. And it's been a really interesting process because he's not from the startup or business world. And so a lot of times at the beginning, I was like, oh yeah, we should do this. And he's like, yeah, yeah, dope. And then he wouldn't do it. And I'm like, I got frustrated. And I this happens to me with a bunch of people who I'm like, dude, I meet somebody, they're like, oh, I want to improve my situation. I'm like, oh yeah, you just got to do this. Or I'd back you if you could find something, I'll bring the capital, you do the work. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then 3 weeks later, I don't hear from them. And I used to think, oh, it's because they're lazy. And I actually realized it's not because they're lazy. They're not lazy people. In fact, usually the person I'm trying to help, they're working 10 times harder than me at their day job, right? One guy was a plumber. And, you know, it's like, okay, this guy's doing much harder work. It's not that he's lazy. It's that they're afraid and they're confused. So they're afraid to fail and they're afraid to look dumb if they do the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing to me. And they're also just confused. They don't know where to start. They just never started something like this from scratch. And for me and you, we've spent now 15 years doing this. It's very easy to think, oh, dude, I just spin up a landing page. I would set this up on Beehive and then I would go over here and I would do this. And then I would not focus on that other stuff. And I wouldn't care about advertisers till I get to 20,000 subscribers. And like, I would scrape this email list. And I would do this ad and I would, and they're like,
dude, I don't,
I've never run a Facebook ad. I've never done a landing page. I've never done any of this stuff.
I don't want to talk about that stuff publicly. I kind of regret it a little bit because like you had this at Milk Road. I had it a little bit as well, where like people in South America or other countries were just like
copying.
They would like translate it and then just send the email like 30 minutes later. And in one regard, it's flattering, but in another, I'm like, and sometimes it's harmful, but other times it just pisses me off. Most of the time, it just pisses me off. It's not harmful, but I've changed. Once we got audiences, I was like, I don't want to talk about this stuff. And so, yeah. I get nervous about that. Now, I don't think you have, like, whether this thing succeeds or not, it doesn't impact you other than you want to help your friend. So I want to help why him.
I think if I talk about it publicly, it's going to keep me invested in it. It's going to keep me engaged because I'm going to have to, like, keep reporting the story. And I also think it's easier for me to justify the time because this takes time for me to help. And I already had a pretty busy plate. But if I could say, well, you know what?
I'm
able to use this for stories as content. Then I don't have to separately make other content. So that's my selfish justification. I also think if somebody was going to copy this blueprint, I wouldn't do it in personal trainers. That's only because he is a personal trainer. There's 30 other niches where this would work better than for personal trainers. And I think that because it's specific to him and it actually fits it's authentic and it fits his actual, like where he is a master. Like in the same way, I'm like, dude, I don't get it. Why don't you just blah, blah, blah. What I realized was he probably looks at me and says the same thing. He's like, dude, I told you to increase your protein intake and just eat these macros. You'll get the body you want in 6 months. But here I am at your house and there's a Chick-fil-A wrapper. What's going on here? Right? Like that's the equivalent, right? Like, or he'd be like, oh, you should wake up and do this morning cardio thing. Fasted cardio. It'll only take you 10 minutes. Sounds so easy. Sure enough, he shows up. I got some excuse as to why I didn't do it. I'm like, oh, I just forgot that like a beginner is always going to go through these stages and I just got to stay patient with him the way he's been patient with me. Now I do those things when he says them much better than I did at the beginning.
You got to get this page up though. You got to get this page up by tomorrow. Or
I'm going to get it up tomorrow. before this thing is done. But the cool thing that I've been doing, by the way, is I've been texting him one thing every day. I'm like, yo, you got to just do, I'm like, the way you get, like, you give me a workout of the day, it's like, go to the gym for an hour and you're going to do this workout. And I just got to listen to you, follow your blueprint, and it's going to get the result I want because you've done this. You've mastered this, you're a black belt in this. I was like, I'm going to do the same thing on the business side. I'm not going to hope you figure it out. I'm not going to leave it to you to figure it out. I'm going to give you one thing a day to do. It'll probably take you about an hour. I'm going to give you your daily workout each day. And so that's how I've been doing it. One day, one little text message at a time. And I'm like his business trainer, the way he's my personal trainer. So it's been kind of interesting to see how that's worked. And that's been pretty effective, to be honest.
I'm eager to see if you regret this or not. He'll pull it off. It's going to be at least mildly successful because he's got a massive head start because we're going to be talking about it.
But I told him, I was like, dude, I'm not going to give up on you. I was like, you could have given up on me and been like, dude, this guy's
Are you paying him still?
Yeah, I pay him. But like, you know, so there's obviously a little difference there. But like, there's a difference between you show up and do the job or you go the extra mile. He goes way the extra mile with me. So like, you know, my kids are raging out. He'll be holding one of my kids so I can get the workout in while he's training me. Or like, he'll come in on an off day and just make the gym better. Just a surprise and be like, look, I want your environment to be dope because you're going to just get that extra 5-10% juice enjoying your environment. And you know, a trainer doesn't have to do all that. They don't have to come and rearrange your gym and help you with your kids or show up, you know, stay for 2 hours extra because whatever, you know, that sort of stuff.
So I've got this friend named Nick Gray. Do you know who Nick Gray is?
He's the party guy.
So Nick Gray is my good friend. He started a thing called Museum Hack where he had another company that like made parts for private planes or something like that, that he sold. And then he started a thing called Museum Hack, which was private tours and museums. He sold that. Now he's got a new thing called the 2-Hour Cocktail Party. It's a book on cocktail parties and how to host the perfect cocktail party. It's honestly quite good. I use his techniques. He's doing this new thing that he just showed me where whenever he goes to a bar or a restaurant or a museum or anything, he takes a picture of the food or the front of the building and he reviews it. But can you see go to the MDB link I have in there? Look at what he does. So he posts a review of the place, but he puts his book in the picture. And he's been testing this. And over the past couple months, his photos, there's like analytics on it. They have 2 million views on his pictures. And this guy, Nick, he's crazy. So he just tweeted out this thing. He goes, I'm going to host a conference for all my ex-girlfriends. He's got a lot of ex-girlfriends because he dates a lot. And he's very charming. And so girls love him. But he's really nice. And so he stays friends with all of his ex-girlfriends. One time, this guy, for his 40th birthday party, he rented out a water park. And there was like 30 of us. And I swear to God, I'm not exaggerating. 4 of the guests were his ex-girlfriends and they were all hanging out together. And he's like, so this guy's crazy. But look at this. Can you see the link to his Google?
This is so funny. This is the funniest growth hack I've seen in a long time.
So he has a blog post.
Do you think this is effective? I would never do something like this.
He's got this blog post coming out tomorrow or the next day. And it's, I think if you just Google Nick Gray, G-R-A-Y, you'll see the blog post. I don't know the name of his website. It's probably just nickgray.com. And he's going to like reveal the results. But he was showing me this. I was like, Nick, why? I was just out to eat with him the other day. And he was, and he had his book with him. He pulled it out of his bag and he was taking a picture. I go, what are you doing? He goes, check this out. And he showed me his Google reviews. He goes, I have analytics on this that my video, my photos in the last couple months have gotten 1.8 million views, 1.9 million views. Is this hilarious or what?
That's so funny. This is such a funny, and it reminds me of somebody, the story is better than the actual growth hack. So somebody said this about Pinterest too. They go, yeah, Pinterest, man, they were such grinders. I remember they used to go into the Apple stores and change all the default homepages to Pinterest.com on the Macs that are sitting on the table.
Yeah, and who knows if that works or
and
not.
I'm like, dude, this guy's spending hours driving to Apple stores to try to get like 5 impressions on his website and think that somebody's going to be like, huh, you know, I went there for an iPhone. But you know what I really want to do? What was that website I saw on the demo computer? I'm going to go sign up and make an account and become a daily active user. That doesn't happen. But the story, the hustle story makes it worth it. And I've done several of those where the hustle makes it sound like you were going to the nth degree, even though it made zero sense to do so.
He has reviews of everything. There's one of Panda Express, of Lululemon, of Charlie's Subs, Vans, the store, any store that he goes to, he's taking this really good picture of like the front. Like there's a Great American Cookies. It looks like it's just like an Annie Ann's in the mall. He takes a picture of the front and just has his book in his hand. There's this guy on Yelp that Sarah and I follow because he tests all the good food places in New York and San Francisco. And he had a newborn when he started doing it. And all the pictures were of his newborn eating the food. And then it was like, you see the baby get like 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old. And I start like getting to know this kid. And we're always right. Like, look, that guy's been there. And it's actually an interesting hack that I think could actually, I don't know if this one will work, but there's like these weird personalities that I've seen on Yelp and on Google reviews where I start to get to know them and I trust the reviews. And it's actually a really fascinating platform to hack. And I wanted to bring that up because I've never really seen like insights like this. And I think it's incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Do you know what I'm doing right after the top of the hour?
Yeah, you have can you talk? You want to announce it? What you're doing?
Yeah. So
how did you do this, by the way? How did you pull this off?
All right, so we have this guy named Michael Harris, nicknamed Harry O. I don't know. I'm going to interview him and find out his story. So I don't want to like reveal his whole story because I don't know the whole thing. But basically, he's one of the co-founders of Death Row Records. And when sometimes Sarah and I, my wife, we volunteer in prisons and we work with this thing called The Last Mile. I've told you about The Last Mile. My friend Chris, he's a tech guy, started it. It basically helps teach inmates how to do tech stuff so hopefully they can get a job once they let out. Well, a lot of those people are like convicted murderers. It's wild. And through that, I met Michael. And he basically went to prison for 30 years in his 20s. And before that, he made up to $1 million a day selling crack and cocaine, I think, and helped discover Denzel Washington and sponsored or funded Broadway plays and things like that and parlayed that into music and thus created Death Row Records with Suge Knight. And he has all these stories about Snoop, Dre, Tupac. So we're going to talk to him and figure out his story.
Are you a little bit intimidated to have this conversation?
Incredibly, because I don't know. You're not like a big pop culture guy, but like basically like there's, you know, he's a girl.
Me?
I am
pop culture.
Dude, you didn't know who Dolly Parton was. But basically, like, there's a lot of, like, I read a book about Eazy-E, and Eazy-E and Dre and Death Row had a beef, and I don't know, like, where that stands, and, like, if I can say who I'm a fan of and who I'm not a fan of. So I'm a little nervous, because this guy, it's not like our friends or our enemies on Twitter where we're just going to argue. Of course, this guy will never do anything bad, but, like, you know, like that's, it's a little bit more real.
He's more capable for sure. Don't make the mistake of, like referencing somebody by first name. If you don't know them, they'll be like, yeah, I was reading about Ease and, say Ease. Yeah. Easy. But, I don't know him. I'm just trying to seem cool here. It's like when people,
so
they say they're coming to visit the Bay Area and they go, hey, I'm going to be in San Fran this week. And I just have to tell them, I say, hey man, listen, just as a friend. Nobody says San Fran here. So you're just outing yourself as a tourist as soon as you say that.
That's how I feel. So I feel I want to be respectful. But I also want to like let them know that, like, you know, I've listened to all this music. I've read a lot of books about it, but purely from an academic standpoint. You know what I'm saying?
We're like brothers from two way different mothers.
So like that's, yeah. So it feels like a little funky, but like I was talking to him the other day, because the reason I got in touch with him is he wants to like launch some podcast or he's brainstorming, and he asked to talk to me, and I said, yeah. And he starts talking, and I'm like, hey, you realize that like when you're talking to me about this drug trade and things like that, like you talk about delegation and empowering your coworkers and things like that. Like,
right.
This is business stuff. Do you want to come on the pod? And so I thought it'd be cool.
Yeah, we've had people who've made, you know, originally this podcast called My First Million, because it was, let's interview people who've made $1 million in many different ways. So I interviewed, you know, a business person. Then I interviewed a poker player. And then somebody who made it through selling, you know, weighted blankets online, and somebody who made it doing, you know, deodorant. Somebody made it doing 1-800-GOT-JUNK and like a whole bunch of different things. But now we have somebody who did it in some new ways, selling crack cocaine, record label, and who knows what else. I think it's going to be amazing. I'm joking around just because I know if I was in your position, I would feel a little squirmy going into it. Like, just like, how do I not say something stupid? Like, I know this could be great. This is when things are tough. It's when you know it could be great, but you also know it could easily go not great if you don't build rapport or you don't really know how to guide the conversation properly, because it's not your standard interview, right? Like, if we brought somebody on who built a SaaS company to, you know, $20 million, we'd be like, cool, I know 20 questions to ask you that are all safe. You're going to give me 20 answers that are all safe. And I know exactly how the conversation is going to go. And it really can't go anywhere that's out of my comfort zone in terms of a question or a topic to talk about. Whereas this one's going to be, you know, the zip code is out of your comfort zone. So you're not going to, I know how I would feel going into that interview. That's why
I wanted you to come because I thought it'd be fun, since you are, you're even a few more zip codes away than I am. Are you sure? Exactly. Are you sure you can't make it? You should.
Yeah, exactly. Death Row Records. Name's a bit crude, don't you think? Do you ever think of something softer, like Milk Road, for example? No. Unfortunately, I got another thing scheduled at that time. But
all right. This is the pod. By the way, the gentleman's agreement is working, by the way. I went to a party with a bunch of 23-year-olds. Sounds a lot worse than it is. A friend turned 23. He asked me to go.
Your friend,
I went.
Jeffrey's party on an island
somewhere? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was at like the Lolita like taco taco place. No. I had so many people come up to me and said, hey, by the way, I honored the gentleman's agreement. That's because the show, we have this thing called the gentleman's agreement. We make this content for free, and but it's not actually free to listen. In exchange, you got to go subscribe to our YouTube. And it's working. We're getting like 800 to 1,000 new YouTube subscribers a day. So,
yeah, this basically 3x the number of daily subscribers we were getting on our YouTube channel.
Who would have thought?
That's the...
Everyone told us to do this the whole time. And we were like, you're an idiot. No one follows that.
Yeah, we also, we say it a lot now. But for like 2 years, we never told anybody to do anything. So we're just kind of, we're due.
Yeah, we're due.